Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle, you're with me. We last week we left off, we were like, guys, we might not even fucking come back, right? We might not even come back because, like, nothing is happening. Nothing is different about these bears. So, we'll see in a couple weeks. And instead, I shit a whole turkey, Kyle.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this here because you said on our last episode, you said, and I quote, if the Bears do this exact same thing again, if Caleb puts them in position to win against the Lions on Thanksgiving and Eberflus blows it again, I will shit a turkey.
Yeah.
So, Travis, what the people of Start Kyle Orton, our dedicated fan base, the Scodheads, what they want to know is if you shit that bird out, Travis, and I think, I mean, I want to make this clear. I think shit a turkey is very different than just saying, I will shit turkey. You're not passing some Oscar Mayer turkey slices out to Keister. I want a whole bird. Now, I'll grant you that it can be skinned. It can be bone, you know, it can be cleaned. It can be like a Thanksgiving turkey.
Right.
But it's got to come out intact. So how are we going to pull this off, pal?
Look, now, Kyle, I did not say I will shove a turkey up my ass and then shit the whole thing.
No, you didn't. You didn't.
All right.
Shit a turkey.
I just said I would shit a turkey. So I left this up to God. I left it up to the Almighty. If a turkey teleports itself inside of me and I shit it out, not only A, will I shit it out like a good soldier, B, proof of the divine.
Right? I feel like this is you weaseling, and I feel like you are becoming the very thing you despise the most, which is that Florida State fan who said he would eat literal shit if Florida State lost to, I can't remember who it was at this point, and has refused to, and said he would film himself eating this shit, and he still has refused to do this, and Florida State has continued to suffer.
Right.
And that program is going to suffer until he eats the shit. So, Travis, you could be, and I'm just directing directing the Scott heads to know this. If you're refusing to shit out a whole turkey,
I'll shit a whole turkey if it gets in there.
The Bears' cursed fate from here is on you. All right.
I'll give birth to this fucking turkey if I have to, as long as it weasels its way into me. All right. Yeah.
So,
but also, like, in the case of Florida State, they got demonstrably worse. All right. Like, how are we going to attribute this to me? Right.
Yeah. How are we going to, we're knee deep in the, we're already, So, anyways,
everything sucks right now.
In non-poultry related matters, it did happen. Caleb Williams, you know, that
it sure fucking did, Kyle.
I turned that game off at halftime because I was like, it's a goddamn holiday.
Yeah.
I don't need to watch Caleb Williams throw for 59 yards or whatever in a national TV blowout. But I started getting some notifications on my phone. And I was like, oh my God, is Caleb doing the thing again? And I watched Caleb start to do the thing.
Yeah.
He got him all the way down to the Lions 15-yard line. And then we had penalties and penalties. And then we had Matt fucking Eberflus. He saved the best for last.
He did.
Best. I mean, that is... Is that not the single greatest head coaching, just like, it just pointed to, like, not like greatest head, worst head coaching job or whatever, not like the worst blow, just like the single worst decision or lack thereof, the lack of it. Mm-hmm. That not the single worst brain fart you have ever seen a head coach have?
He has been for weeks trying to get fired, right? Trying to be like, okay, what'll it take to get the Bears to fire a head coach midseason? All right. Like, do I just not play defense on a Hail Mary? No, that didn't work. Do I just completely fail after my quarterback gets us back from overtime? Like, what if it's just my defense and my defensive play calling that allows the Vikings to travel all the way down the field to end a game in overtime? No, that didn't work. Okay. Here's my fucking plan.
I just won't call a timeout.
I will watch 32 whole seconds run off the clock when we are down a field goal against the best team in the NFL, and I have a timeout, and I'm just not going to use it. Let's see if that does it. That did it. It did it. He got fired.
The thing is, if you call the timeout right when Caleb is sacked, it's 30 seconds. Yeah. 30 seconds is an eternity there for
long.
I get that you're granted, once you burn that timeout, Caleb probably can't throw middle of the field anymore, and that's upsetting. But at the same time, at that point, when Caleb takes that sack, you're not thinking, let's go for the game-winning touchdown anymore. You're thinking, let's get in position for a game-winning field goal. Mm-hmm. And you have plenty of time for two quick sideline tosses to get in range, to cut 10 yards off that field goal distance and go for a try there. Any coach worth his salt calls that timeout the second Caleb gets it. And what I think also really contributed to Eberflus getting fired, and we know this is a trend back to, well, it's a trend his entire tenure in Chicago, that it really started to come to a head after that Washington game, of Matt Eberflus refusing to take accountability.
Yeah.
And it felt like in that post-game presser, not only was he, when he said, I think we handled that perfectly or whatever.
He doubled the fuck down.
When he said, we handled it perfectly, he was referring to himself as coaches, therefore putting the blame subtly on his rookie quarterback.
Yet again, yeah.
And what I thought, what I really appreciated was, you know, Caleb Williams, it's so funny for the reputation that he has as a diva and all the nasty shit people said about him at USC that ended up not being true. He is so carefully managed in everything he says. He has, and even as the controversy has swirled, and even as we've gotten quotes on the record from guys like Jalen Johnson and Kevin Byard and Cole Kmet and all of the, and Keenan Allen, all of these DJ Moore veterans openly criticizing their head coach in the media as we got the last couple weeks. Caleb Williams has been no part of that. He's been smart enough to know that the minute he says something, the story becomes, well, Caleb Williams said this. He's been so careful. But I thought it was very important that Caleb was like, yeah, you know, later in my career, I might feel like I can take a time out there, but you know, I just gotta just run the play as called and trust my coaches. So I thought that was the most pointed comment Caleb has made, because you know, reading between the line, run that through the quarterback cliche translator, what you get is, I'm a fucking rookie quarterback. I didn't have fucking permission to call a time out there. That was not on my ass. Fuck you. I can't believe he's even trying to say it's my fault.
Yeah. Like, and I mean, other players backed him up on that. They were like, Caleb's not calling that fucking timeout. Well, that's him.
And if you're Matt Eberflus, that is the thing that was probably your final suicide. It's not that you're, you know, you threw Tyreek Stevenson under the bus, whatever, they can live with that. You threw Cairo Santos under the bus, whatever. But you want to start trying to throw Caleb Williams under the bus. Oh, fucking not going to happen, buddy, because this franchise only has one potential causeway out of the bog here right now, and it's Caleb Williams. So you are not more important to this franchise.
I mean, Caleb just went out there and almost single-handedly beat the best team in the NFL. Just brought the Bears all the way back. He tore their
defense.
Brought
them all the way back 3 weeks in a row against three NFC playoff. And it's possibly the three best teams in the NFC. And unfortunately, all three of them are in our fucking division. Caleb brought them back. Yeah. He did it three times. He threw it away three times. This kid is, with that offensive line, with an offensive coordinator who's now his head coach, who's been on the job for 2 fucking weeks, he's done all of that. You've failed him 3 weeks in a row, and then you, not directly, but, you know, pretty clearly, if people know how to speak coach shade, tried to throw him under the bus because your dumb ass let that game happen with a fucking timeout in your pocket.
He banked it. You know what, Kyle? The beauty of that timeout is he banked it forever. He is never getting another head coaching job. He will always have that timeout.
He should take a picture.
Pocket.
He should get a screen cap of that game of Chicago still having one yellow dot. Hang it up in your man cave or whatever, because buddy, you're carrying that timeout with you fucking forever.
That to the fucking grave.
That is your lasting memento of your time as an NFL head coach. And he ends his time as an NFL head coach.
Yeah.
With the worst record of any coach, with at least 21 score games as a coach. The worst record in one score games. And that is, to me, that's like being a manager in baseball, where usually, most of the time, the manager of a baseball team doesn't matter, because over 162 games, talent's going to win out. But when you have those baseball teams that just consistently have, year after year, horrible one-run game records, that's when you realize, like, it doesn't matter until it does, and in the moments that matter, your guy's pushing all the wrong buttons. And that's Matt Eberflus. For 3.5 quarters of every game, the head coach maybe doesn't matter that much. Maybe it's about the players, it's about the offensive coordinator, it's about the defensive coordinator. But in the moments that matter, no guy has ever come up short more often than Matt Eberflus. And we saw it 4 weeks in a row. Or 3 weeks in a row, but, you know, I guess we all ignore the Cardinals and Patriots games for good reason, but I think we all lump the Commanders in with the three games. You know, we saw 4 close games in a row, 4 fourth quarters, where if he just does his job, the entire story of this, the Bears are the only team in the NFL right now that has a losing record with a positive point differential. They're the only team in the NFL that has a losing record with a positive turnover differential. You've got a rookie quarterback that hasn't thrown an interception since he was in another country.
Yeah.
And you can't find a way to win with
and that, top 10 and that defense. Interception was like hilarious bullshit.
A defense like... that's still top 10 in yeah. most metrics. You have a rookie quarterback who doesn't turn the ball over, and you have a top 10 defense, and you can't figure out a way to put those fucking ingredients better to something other than 4-8. Because you know what? At 6-6, this motherfucker would still be alive.
Yeah.
But 4-8.
This team, if you can fucking believe it, Kyle, was 4-2 and just about to be 5-2 not that long ago. Less than 2 months ago, the vibe around this team was about to be, they're 5-2, they're going to be 7-2 going into the Packers game. This is crazy. It's going to be an awesome season. That Hail Mary landed, and this guy's brain broke completely in half, and he was completely worthless.
And he refused to take accountability.
And he took no accountability.
And every story, we've had some good stories come out from Adam Johns, from Diana Rossini, a lot of people telling the true behind-the-scenes, real Hollywood story of what happened with the Bears the last couple of weeks. And all of them, all of it comes back to when he went up there after that Washington game. And he refused to take any accountability for what went wrong whatsoever. Then he lost him. He lost him forever. And he never won him back, never even tried to win him back. Remained stubborn and unapologetic to the end, basically.
And we are going, we're going to talk about this with coaches as the season goes on, because for the first time in Bears history, we can talk about new coaches during the season because we don't have one.
Yeah.
But not only is not having accountability a bad look for you, for the franchise, and with your players, it's bad because you don't improve if you don't have accountability. If you don't believe that you fucked up, you aren't going to adjust anything. And I can't even, like, this is the worst coaching decision in NFL history, I think. Letting 32 seconds go off the clock with a timeout in your pocket, yes. But I don't think there's anything more illustrative of that than having your field goal blocked by Green Bay. Everybody on Green Bay saying there was a flaw in your coverage. This dude kicks too low. You have this big spot right here. You don't ever really change how you run the play. So we exploited that. And then to go into the next week against Minnesota and have the very next field goal blocked in the same way. Not only does he not have accountability, he's not learning anything. He truly believes that everything that he thinks is flawless. Like, he's just a flawless dude. Sorry, sometimes kicks get blocked, guys. There was nothing to learn from that. And immediately, he gets hammered again. That should have been the moment he got fired.
That's frankly a really great point. I hadn't thought about it exactly. Yeah, you're right. The lack of accountability means that even the people that might have defended him and said, like, you know, you got to give this guy a chance, blah, blah, blah. Give him a chance to do what? He doesn't think he's done anything wrong. He doesn't think he's got anything to work on. So if you're sitting there telling me he can get better at what? He doesn't even know what he has to get better at. I actually had this.
He thinks it's execution. It's all execution. Right. It's all on the players.
Yep. And actually, I had this conversation a lot specifically about Mitch Trubisky. Because one of the things that drove me nuts about Mitch is when he would struggle and he'd come out, he would say, like, oh, well, we as an offense, you know, we got to be better. We got to do this. We got to do that. Mitch was never very specific, though, about what he needed to do better. And every story that's ever come out behind the scenes about Mitch Trubisky and his conflict with Nagy was Mitch wanted to run the plays he was already comfortable with. He wanted to do the things that he already knew how to do. Everything was everyone else's fault if they asked him to do anything that he wasn't comfortable with. And that's the thing. If you're not taking accountability for where your flaws are and where you're letting the operation down, you're not going to improve those things because you're not acknowledging. I think one of the reasons that, like, Josh Allen is such a great historic outlier in the NFL history is everyone talks about him as, like, he's an absolute psychopath, and he, every single offseason, was like, my mechanics are shitty. I keep having these issues. And he went and he did millions of repetitions at a biomechanical lab with sensors all over his body trying to figure out what exactly he was doing that was throwing the ball wrong. Because he accepted that, like,
right, you have to be
you
like
you have to accept it,
like, I'm shit in this way in order to improve
this is
upon
not
it.
Yeah, this is not just something that's going to improve with reps or experience. It's not that I'm reading the defense wrong. It's not that I'm doing this. It's not that my receivers are shit or my offensive line's bad, like so many of the excuses people wanted to make for me. It's because me throw ball bad. Me have to throw ball better,
right?
And that's Matt Eberflus. If you're not admitting that you're doing a bad job. You're not going to fix the problems. So there's no reason to keep you, because there's no optimist case to keep you. There's just not.
Yeah. So, all right. So he got fired.
He did.
Now, last time we were on this podcast,
he got fired after having to go on the Zoom call and say that he had, like...
I love, my favorite part of that story that came out is he was on the Zoom call because the Bears front office staff, it was George, it was Kevin Warren, it was Ryan Poles, were all in a room, and their meeting had gone long, and the purpose of the meeting was to bitch about Matt Eberflus. And it went overtime by an hour. They were in there for 2.5 hours instead of 1 hour. They just let him go on Zoom because they were just
too busy,
absolutely shitting on the guy.
Yeah.
What a fucking way to go.
Yeah, I mean, you can go back and listen to last week's episodes, folks. We were absolutely positive that the Bears were not going to fire this guy mid-season because they'd never done it. And I was always a big believer on nothing ever happens when it comes to the Bears. The only thing that made me think it was even possible is there were so many stories right after the game about how long Kevin Warren lingered in the locker room.
Yeah.
And how clearly pissed Kevin Warren was about the whole thing. So, and then I was like, well, this will be a good test, because if the McCaskies are still running the show the same way they always have, he ain't going anywhere. But if Kevin Warren actually has this power that people keep telling us he actually has, he's not just a president in name only. He's not just Ted Phillips the sequel. Then Matt Eberflus gets fired. Matt Eberflus gets fired. And he also thought, pretty noteworthy, the press conference with Ryan Poles felt to me like Ryan Poles was, I described it to you, I was like, it's kind of like when the kid who hits a baseball through the neighbor's window and his dad stands behind him on their front porch as he apologizes to the neighbors and says what he did wrong. That was the vibe of the Ryan Poles, Kevin Warren press conference, where Ryan Poles basically... It felt to me like Ryan Poles was admitting, like, yeah, Kevin is my dad now, and I really have to not fuck up the rest of what I do here, because I think I'm on strike two now with this Eberflus thing.
For sure. The response that he gave to the Shane Waldron question was interesting, I will say. He really thought about that one. I don't know if he wasn't expecting someone to mention Shane, but he got that question, like, what went wrong with Shane Waldron? And he sat there for like 10 full seconds, just like, and like the response he came out with was very like media friendly, but it was also kind of like, he put no blame on Shane Waldron with that. And it felt almost like he didn't want to admit fault, kind of in the same way that Eberflus didn't want to admit fault, because it gave you the feeling that, like, he had a little more to do with hiring Shane Waldron than we know. Like, maybe he was very involved with that pick, and he's sitting right next to Daddy there. And I think it's been made clear to Poles that he is also on a very short leash. There's been word, like, 4 to 6 weeks ago, we had heard that Ryan Poles pretty much didn't have his powers as far as player movement anymore. They had frozen that. They said, there will be no trades at the deadline. That's why he kept his second round pick instead of trading it like he always does. Apparently, they were guys he wanted. And Warren and McCaskey told him, you're not doing anything. Like, this team is frozen right now. We're going to deal with this after the season. So, for as much as Kevin Warren has said, Ryan Poles is going to lead the next coach search, like, you know, he's going to stay on as GM, I don't necessarily believe that. And I don't think Poles believes that, right?
I think Ryan Poles' job might actually depend on how this roster performs without Matt. I think, because...
It depends a lot on Thomas Brown.
Eberflus survived because he pinned his failures last year on Justin Fields. Ryan Poles right now is surviving because he's probably able to pin his failures on Matt Eberflus. And there's some good arguments for that. Like I said, when you mentioned that the Bears are the only team with a losing record right now that has a positive point differential, the only team with a positive turnover differential, like all of the record in close games, all of that points to a team with some talent that's really being let down by coaching. So this is where Ryan Poles' roster needs to show its mettle now under some more competent coaching before I think Ryan Poles' job is safe. And I think that's how it should be. I don't think Ryan Poles, the benefit of, and he's not a guy that I'm not going to sit here and say I demand Ryan Poles be fired. He's also not a guy that I would shed a single tear for if he was fired.
Yeah.
But I'm fine saying that the benefit of the fucking doubt for Ryan Poles is gone. It's non-existent.
Yeah.
You will be scrutinized on every move going forward from now like you've never made another move. I don't want to hear about the goddamn trade. I don't want to hear about Caleb Williams. You squandered it, buddy. You put all of those eggs in the Matt Eberflus basket.
And
you mentioned Shane Waldron. I thought something noteworthy that came out of the story about Shane Waldron that, again, points to me with a problem with Matt Eberflus. In training camp, guys were wondering, why are we running a whole new run game than the one we've done for 2 years with Chris Morgan that's been the most successful run game in the NFL?
Hmm.
Like, Shane Waldron trashed all their run game assets. Now, granted, Justin Fields was a huge part of why that run game was so successful. But they were still better running the ball last year, even in games where they didn't have Justin Fields, than they were in the, you know, the first month or two of this season under Shane Waldron. And not to let Chris Morgan off the hook, but it seems pretty noteworthy that the pass pro since Chris Morgan or since Shane Waldron has fired looks a lot more like we expected it to look coming into the season. It's been closer to average. And the tackle play looks more like it looked last year.
We've seen that improvement in the tackles that we were expecting too. Like Braxton and Darnell Wright have moved into like the top five at their respective positions.
We've seen what we expected to see from those guys. So not to completely alleviate Chris Morgan, but like it sure seems like Shane Waldron's schemes were putting Chris Morgan's guys in really bad spots. And I'm also wondering, but again, this goes to Matt Eberflus. Why did you keep Chris Morgan instead of just letting Shane Waldron have his own O-line coordinator? If the thing that, plus, not only did you keep Shane Waldron, you promoted him to run game coordinator while letting Shane Waldron ditch his run game.
Yeah.
What the fuck was the point of that then? Just fire Shane, just fire Chris Morgan, bring in an O-line coach who's worked with Shane Waldron and at least knows what Shane Waldron wants to do.
Yeah.
Instead, you keep Chris Morgan, and you're not letting him run his stuff. You're making him run stuff that he doesn't even know how to run. It's insane. And again, that reflects on Matt Eberflus, that you're not, you know, he's a guy who made a big deal about wanting to be a CEO head coach when he was first here. He didn't even call the plays on defense. Like, he wanted to be a delegator. Like, if you're going to be the actual head coach, you've got to be aware when that shit's happening and responsive to it. You're responsible for all of that. So just complete every story that comes out just makes the whole situation look even worse.
Yeah.
And so we're glad he's gone. I still can't believe they actually did it. It's kind of funny that they did it right after I said, I almost don't want them to, because I'm worried that the next mistake that the Bears would make would be a brand new one for them, but it would be the mistake that a lot of people make, which is hiring the interim head coach.
Yep. And that's what I wanted to talk about next. So we got to talk about Thomas Brown.
Let's talk about Thomas Brown.
He won the press conference.
He did. I think there's a lot to like about Thomas Brown. I think Bears fans have been a little too quick to anoint him, but he does sound competent. The players really seem to respond to him. I thought, you know, Sean McVay gave him a glowing endorsement a little while ago. Sean McVay was like, you know, he was on staff here. I think he's going to be great. He's going to be really something special, which was noteworthy because you know who else was on Sean McVay's staff?
Who's that?
Shane Waldron. Did you hear Sean McVay come out and talk about what a bright young man and future head coach he thinks Shane Waldron should be? No, but he was effusive in praising Thomas Brown. So I think that's noteworthy. I think there is and Thomas Brown was definitely seen as an up-and-comer around the league before the Carolina Panthers disaster last year.
Yeah.
Which I think it's kind of hard to find him personally culpable for. But there is something with Thomas Brown that's worth taking a look at. I almost didn't want them to do that. I almost wanted them to just leave him as OC because I want him to be able to focus purely on Caleb. And they've done great stuff together in 3 weeks. So I'm nervous about resetting any of that for sure. But also, I mean, I'm nervous about them keeping the interim head coach. So what does Thomas Brown, what do you need to see from this team under Thomas Brown that you wouldn't be like, oh no, don't make that specific mistake if they do keep the interim head coach?
Yeah, I want to be clear. There's nothing they can do that will please me, that will make me happy that they hire him on as head coach. Here's the thing. Teams that fire their head coach midseason almost always see a dead cat bounce with the interim head coach. And they so often hire that motherfucker. And they're just like, yes, oh, we got our guy. And then like that guy lasts 1 year. Like every fucking time because it's a disaster. Like,
well, and in this,
yeah, if you get rid of a head coach midseason, it's usually because everything is going wrong. The vibes are bad. You're losing games. The players are going, you know, and there's a fucking mutiny. And then you get the new guy in. It's usually somebody your players like, just like a Thomas Brown, right? Everybody rallies around, like a Romeo Crennel, a guy who every player who has played for him loves, right? Like, you take that guy and all of a sudden, oh, we're all excited, and then, you know, you're feeling good, the vibes are good, you go out and get some wins. Like, mark my words, the Bears are breaking their losing streak this Sunday. They are going to beat the 49ers. I will almost guarantee that they do that, because this is just what happens when you get an interim head coach. It always happens. And yes, I like Thomas Brown to an extent. I think he has a bright future. He's young enough to where if he avails himself in these last five games, maybe he can go get a nicer job next year. Maybe he stays on as offensive coordinator, depending on who we hire as head coach. But you can't hire your interim guy as a head coach because you are not going to properly evaluate him. Like, this dude was on your coaching staff when everything was going wrong. And that's one of the things he said during his own press conference. Somebody lobbed him a question that was like, basically, oh, Eberflus was shit. Do you want to, like, pile on? What would you have done different? And he was like, hey, guess what, buddy? I was on the staff. Like I'm part of that, and I have to be accountable for what went wrong this season.
That's a good answer, though. That to be self-aware enough to say that is
it is, and it's a good answer because it's true. This guy was on the staff while all of this was happening. And we can't forget that, because I promise you, the Bears are going to win some games now with Thomas Brown. I have seen, Kyle, I saw a tier list of coaches. All right, I made my own. We'll talk about it here over the next few weeks or whatever, over who we really like as a head coach. And I saw Bleacher Report put Thomas Brown up there with Ben Johnson in just the top tier slam dunk head coaching hire. And that is the type of absolute insanity that happens when you fire your head coach midseason with the interim guy.
All right, what if I rephrase the question just a little bit?
Okay.
What would Thomas Brown have to do in order for you to be okay with him securing a head coaching interview with the Bears for the next job? Like, if this is part one of his audition, he still has to go head to head against Ben Johnson or whatever in the, they have to go through. Because I will say, there's actually nothing he could do short of, I think, literally winning every single one of these games and somehow sneaking into the playoffs and winning a playoff game.
Then you're fucked. Yeah, you have to hire him.
There's nothing but that would be where I would just hand him the job, no questions asked. That's the only scenario. I will say, if they win 3 or 4 of these games, not a spirited 2-3, win 3 or 4 of these games, including at least one win over Green Bay in that.
Yeah, you got to beat Green Bay first.
Got to beat Green Bay. Then I'm fine with him being in that round of interviews and being a legitimate candidate for the job. You still interview Ben Johnson. You still go through all of the process. That just gets his foot in the door to even be considered as a real contender for the job. There's nothing that would get me to hand him the job other than, like I said, the wild playoff scenario. But I would also, it's also going to depend greatly to me on what those wins look like and how Caleb looks in the, because Caleb's got to show that he's still progressing under this guy.
Yeah.
It can't just be eking out some 17-13 defensive squeakers. I need to see the penalties cutting down. I need to see it needs to be cleaner, smarter operation all around. And Caleb has to keep developing. We have to see this offense start to reach its potential, for me to believe that this isn't just a dead cat bounce where it's like, okay, this guy does have a different way of doing things that fits this roster better.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically my nightmare. I mean, what's happening here is we've talked about this a lot in regards to baseball. And this article that was written by this asshole whose name does not need to be mentioned anymore, way back on the old Grantland website, about how actually the improvement from a negative WAR player to a mediocre player is just as impactful, if not more impactful, than going from a mediocre player to a very good player in baseball. And I think that's pretty much what's happening here. If we're going to see improvement, because we're going from a guy who was making back-to-back-to-back-to-back the worst coaching decisions in NFL history to a guy who could just be fine. And it's everybody's going to be like, oh, what a godly ray of sunlight this man is. Like, oh, shit, competence, right? Competence looks really fucking good. And we've already said that this Bears team should probably have 8 wins, probably 9 wins, because it depends on how you feel about the Cardinals and the New England games, if our head coach wasn't the worst head coach in the league at this point. So, yeah, Thomas Brown could rattle off 5 straight wins, but to me, that doesn't improve my thinking about, like, oh, I'm happy that he's going to be interviewed for the head coaching job. It's all smoke.
The only reason that I don't necessarily buy that it would all be smoke is that this is not the gauntlet that saved Eberflus' job last year, for example, when he...
It is tough games.
This is literally the hardest schedule remaining of anybody in the NFL. And you know, you got to get through when the easiest game left on the schedule is the 49ers. I mean, in order to do the things he was doing, you're not only that, but you would have to, that would include a road win at Minnesota, a road win at Lambeau, a home win, I guess, against Detroit. I mean, you'd have to beat, is Seattle here or there? Seattle's there, right?
I think Seattle's at Seattle.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a fucking nightmare place to play always. Yeah. So, if you manage 3 or 4 wins out of this gauntlet with almost all of them being on the road in some of the most hostile environments in the league, it would be hard for me to just write that off as well, regression to the mean, because I'm not sure even regressing to the mean, this Bears team is better than some of those teams that they're about to face, especially in their territory. I think he'd have to do some legit by God coaching to get those results. And I'm skeptical that he's gonna. I think this problem mostly takes care of himself, because anything less than 3 wins here is pretty much a non-star. If he goes 2-3 and ends the year at 6-11, I don't think you're like, oh, we got to keep that guy. Yeah. If he goes a spirited 1-4, you know, he's probably not even getting a courtesy interview. But yeah, I mean, if he does actually run the gauntlet, it almost implies that he has to be doing something real fucking special, because it is such a gauntlet.
Well, and we've also seen things go the other way. It was the Raiders. Was it Hugh Jackson where that team put him in as interim head coach, and then they just, like, they rattled off wins. Didn't they go to the playoffs? All the players campaigned for him to be hired as head coach.
Oh, the special team. No, it was when they fired Gruden for being racist.
Yeah, it was the special teams coach.
Scaramucci. No, not Scaramucci.
It wasn't Scaramucci.
Oh my god. He was a Trump guy. It's Italian. It was an Italian.
Oh god. Let's see. Gruden
Biasacchi. Rich Biasacchi.
Yes. Yeah. And then that team basically fucking mutinied.
Getting canceled for saying something offensive about Italians. I was this close.
Right. So, yeah, he runs the table, like I said, you're kind of screwed. You're going to have to hire Thomas Brown, right? This schedule is weird. We are home against Seattle. We've got at the 49ers Monday night against the Vikings, and then a Sunday against the Lions, and then a Thursday at home against Seattle.
So to go at least 3-2 in these games, you're almost certainly, you either have to beat the Lions, and you are winning a road game probably in Green Bay or Minnesota.
If he wins at Minnesota on Monday night, that would be pretty big.
That would be big. They'd be big. Yeah.
But we have a direct comparison here. The Bears just ran through all 3 NFC North teams right in a row and would have won all 3 games if not for their head coach.
Yeah.
So we have a direct comparison, Thomas. If you win all 3 games, you'll have proven you're better than Matt Eberflus, I guess.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, yeah, I mean, it's fraught. It's a delicate situation. But I do think, you know, and I think it sure sounds like the Bears are, at this point at least, committed to having an interview process no matter what he does. So that's
good. Yes.
But yeah, I think it's going to be, he's going to have to make, I think it would almost have to be an indisputable case for it.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Even for the interview.
There's tons of pressure on the org. And I think Kevin Warren is taking this seriously. I think getting rid of Bieber for the show, I mean, he knows, like, this is the hire in Chicago Bears history. It's the hire. You have to get it right. You can't just be complacent with, oh, they went 2-3, but by God, it was a spirited 2-3.
Right.
You can't just do that. And I don't think they're going to do that. For once in Bears history, I don't think they're going to go with inertia just because it's easy. I think they know they have to get this right.
Yeah. If Kevin Warren could exert this level of influence, then I do think he can say, which basically what the Rams did, which is, hey, we have this big fancy fucking stadium that we're about to put up. We need, like, the head coach. Like, we need to draw people in. We need to actually get this right. You need to open your pocketbook this time, because if you don't, then, you know, we're underwater on this stadium deal, all of this stuff. Kevin Warren's very good at that type of stuff. That's what gives me hope that, yeah, if Ben Johnson is like, that's the job I want, you got to pay me this amount, that McCaskey actually says, like, okay, I'm going to hire the most obvious slam dunk head coach and candidate since the last guy I fucking didn't sign who wanted to be our head coach. But yeah, I mean, the other thing you're thinking is what you just said. Well, you got to bring in a big name. And there's there's no bigger name than Bill Belichick. We know he's getting an interview.
So I don't think he will. Actually.
You don't think? You don't think?
No.
You don't think he'll get an interview at all?
No, I think, because the problem with Bill is if you bring in Bill, he's the whole show. And I don't think Kevin Warren, I think that was the same reason Kevin Warren didn't want to interview Jim Harbaugh, didn't want to take a chance on Jim Harbaugh. Like, he did, I don't think Kevin
Warren. They have personal beef, those two. Yeah. Like, there's no personal beef between Warren and Bill Belichick that I know, at least.
I also don't think they bring in Bill Belichick because, I mean, Bill's made his disdain for Caleb Williams and how he plays pretty well known at this point. I don't think you, and the thing is that I don't think Caleb Williams' crew would make it. I don't think they'd sit quietly behind the scenes and say, like, oh, yeah, we will happily play for a guy that has been overwhelmingly negative about my style of play on the air. I don't think that's going to happen. I will press A to doubt on Bill Belichick. Now, it doesn't mean they can't do something stupid.
Yeah.
You know, one of the names that's come up already is Marcus Freeman. And you and I disagree on how stupid that would be. But it would still be stupid.
Yes.
Let's make that clear.
We both agree it would be pretty dope.
I think it would be, I mean, I don't think it would be Urban Meyer stupid. I don't even think it would be the mythical.
Whoa, are we talking about before all the dumb shit Urban Meyer did or after? Because if we're talking about before, it's probably a worse hire than Urban Meyer, right?
No, I think, I guess, again, it depends on. You and I seem to disagree on our evaluation of Marcus Freeman as a head coach. To me, I think Marcus Freeman is a pro head coach in college. I think his defensive schemes are really good. His defensive game plans are really good. I think the way he wants to win games is much more an NFL style play than college. Urban Meyer to me was always the very definition of college coach, because the two things he brought to the table were a gimmicky spread offense and recruiting. Those don't translate.
That's very true.
And being an absolute tyrant. Those three things do not translate to the NFL. Marcus Freeman is the thing that people really talk about him is he's very popular with his players. He's a young guy, was an NFL player himself, relates to the players on a personal level. He's, you know, he's much more popular than Urban Meyer ever was with his people. And he brings, like I said, he was a legitimate NFL teams were trying to poach him as defensive coordinator before he ever got the Notre Dame head coaching job. So he's legit on that side of the ball too. So I don't think it would be Urban Meyer level stupid, but I do think, just looking past the entire swarm of NFL, current NFL candidates, it would be better for the job to go straight to college would be stupid. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the question I pose to you is like, what is it about Marcus Freeman that's any better than like Flores at all? Like he's worse option than Brian
Flores. I guess
my
answer there would be like, as far as we know, he has never personally harassed his franchise quarterback. So
well,
that's
we're gonna
probably
talk-
good.
If you want to talk about accountability, we're going to talk about head coaches later, but we talked about this in the offseason. Flores' response to everything Tua said was very good. That was a guy who did take accountability for everything that he did, and he felt very bad about how Tua felt. But we're going to go over all the head coaching candidates
We have miles to go before we sleep on that one. So
unfortunately,
should we talk about, should we pivot away from coaching and all that? Should we talk about a third impressive comeback for Caleb Williams?
We really do need to focus on the positives because Caleb has looked so good
again
for
this
weeks
is
now.
So when the Washington game happened, one of the things we talked about that we were so upset that got lost in the story of how that game ended is that Caleb Williams did the thing. Because we'd seen Bears quarterbacks have that game that Caleb had against Washington a million times, where nothing's going right. You're getting sacked left and right. The defense is keeping it close. And all you have to do is put together one drive at the end, and they never did it. Jay never did it. Justin never did it. Mitch never did it. Caleb did it. So you were like, by God, he did the damn thing. The Lions game was another game that we've seen Bears quarterbacks have before, where it's halftime, and you're like, he's only got, what, 50 pass, 36 pass, 54 passing yards? That's fucking where it's just a disaster, where it never gets a track. I mean, Justin against Kansas City last year comes to mind. I think he, what, finished the game with 99 passing yards or whatever. This looked like it was headed towards that Kansas City game. It was going to be 41-0 blowout, basically, where the quarterback just never even puts anything together. And he doesn't. He shrugs it. He shrugs it off. He shrugs off a terrible half. He puts together three gate scoring drives. He damn near throws for 300 yards. He had them in position. He had them at the fucking 15-yard line on the last drive of the game before the penalties rolled in. Even the bad sack he took that ended the game, I've seen people get mad at him for that sack. It wasn't even a pass play, folks. It was a quarterback draw.
Yeah.
And his right tackle didn't get the play call and didn't move. What the fuck is he supposed to do there? Like, what is
Larry. Yeah. Oh, Larry.
You can't just throw the ball away on a quarterback draw when receivers aren't running a route and he's in the pocket. That's intentional grounding, right? He was fucked. There's nothing he can do there. So, yeah, it's Caleb just keeps doing things we haven't seen our guys do. I believe and that's not to say he doesn't still have some flaws. There were a couple bad sacks in there. There was one on second down that was really terrible earlier in the drive, I think it was. He's still eating bad sacks. I need to start to see that come down at some point. But this offensive line's not always put him in the best of situations. The play calling obviously hasn't. But everything else you're seeing from him is so encouraging. And that's why there's still, even though we could be, I mean, this could be a fucking suicidal podcast. It could be. We could be talking about how, God damn it, they've really ruined everything again. And they tried to. By God, they did try to ruin everything again. And maybe they still have. We don't know for sure. But there is, like I said, there is a causeway out of the bog here. It is Caleb Williams. He's got promise, and he's going to be the reason that people, because the worst case scenario, like I said last week, was you didn't want what was happening against Arizona and New England to continue the rest of the year. Because then the job doesn't become, hey, you get to come here and coach Caleb Williams. The job becomes, please come here and save Caleb Williams.
Right.
If he keeps this up, it's not going to be, please come save Caleb Williams. It's going to be, look, this is a turnkey operation here. All you got to do is be competent, and you get to be the guy that stands there and takes the credit for Caleb Williams' success for the next 10 years. People are going to want that job. So,
well, I mean, and what we've seen the last 2 weeks is, you know, Kevin O'Connell just effusive in his praise of Caleb Williams. Like, this guy is a problem. He's great right now. I don't want to play him twice a year for the next 10 years. Like, I can't believe I'm going to have to stand across from him. And that's the number one defense in the league by some measurements. And then again, against the Lions, like, the opposing coaching staff is like, my God, that kid, like, we were totally screwed there at the end. When the Bears let the clock run out, the body language of the Lions on the field looked like they thought they were done. They thought the game was over. They thought Caleb was going to win that fucking game. They weren't like running around celebrating, dunking on the Bears. They were sitting down on the field like, did they really just let us win? Like, because we were about screwed. He had been running us up and down the field in the second half. We haven't had this guy. You know, we talked about this when Caleb had a great game against Green Bay. We were like, when's the last time one of our quarterbacks had a game like this against a defense like this? And then he went and did it against the best defense in the NFL. And then he did it against the Lions, a top five defense in the NFL. I can't remember a Bears quarterback doing that to a great defense. Surely there's a Cutler game in there somewhere that shocked me, but I can't remember it.
Well, and again,
it's been forever.
And again, Jay always reached a breaking point. Jay always got frustrated, and bad seasons compounded on Jay. And Justin Fields, that I love Justin, but like that was the number. Justin either had a good game from the jump or he had a bad. I mean, when things went south, they just stayed south.
Yeah.
And seasons stayed south. The thing for Caleb to keep shrugging off these heartbreaking, disastrous losses and these slow starts and all of the chaos and your OC's been fired, for him to keep shrugging all that off just shows just a resilience that's important at that position that's been lacking in Chicago for years too. Like he could be forgiven for wilting in this situation he's been in, and he hasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like it's weird to have this feeling as a Bears fan, without a doubt, but it does feel like, well, we've got the quarterback set. Like really, really, we have good players. Like yeah. Jalen Johnson was saying this when they were, yeah. you know, interviewing him after the game, and he had just apparently gotten done telling Eberflus where to shove his own head. And he was just like, we've got the players.
Yeah.
Like there's no question we have the talent on this team.
This is a team that should already be playing better than it is. And it's a team that is going to add what looks like 3 picks in the top 50. Probably to this roster. It's a team with a very clean cap situation. I mean, you are going to be able to, and you should have faith in this quarterback. So you should be able to, this should be the job if you're an NFL prospective NFL head coach. And that's why it's so important not to let yourself settle, be impressed by low expectations with Thomas Brown. It's so important not to settle unless he makes just an unimpeachable case for the job.
Yeah. And I do want to say this. I've been negative on the idea of hiring an interim head coach, but I want to be clear that's nothing against Thomas Brown. I like Thomas Brown a lot. I think he has a very bright future in the NFL.
It's just that we don't trust history.
It's the principle of the thing. Don't do it. It never works.
The one that gets me still is Freddie Kitchens, because He took over, and Baker had one of the, up until that point, arguably the greatest rookie passing season of all time. Mm-hmm. You know, Justin Herbert or CJ Stroud have since eclipsed it. But like, we thought Kitchens was the one.
I remember at the time you said if this one doesn't work, none of them will ever work,
and it failed miserably.
It was so bad.
It was awful, and I was like, you know what? That cements it. It doesn't matter how good you think the interim head coach is; just don't do it.
I am so glad that you brought up Freddie Kitchens, because that really is, people need to go back and remember how good the Browns offense looked after Freddie Kitchens took over that season. Because no matter what Thomas Brown does, I don't think Caleb can look that good. And even if he does, please remember what happened with Freddie Kitchens, who, by the way, just again got an interim head coaching job at the University of North Carolina. It doesn't work. It's just there's always this big turnover. All the players get hyped. There's this huge wave of positivity. Like, everybody's playing hard for their coach. It's always a guy they like. Like, everybody liked Freddie Kitchens at that point. And then it's just this, everything comes together. You win some games. You know, you're fucking Romeo Crennel, and you get to coach the Chiefs for a year before Andy Reid comes in. It's just, it's always the same story. You can't fall into that trap, even if Thomas Brown is going to be a great head coach one day, even if you just love him, you have to let him go. All right. I go in and I tell Thomas, like, what you are fighting for here is like a great job elsewhere. Like, this is for your future. You're not going to get the job here, buddy, because we can't fucking do it. But like, go out there, show off for 5 games, show everybody that what you can do. And yeah, maybe, like I said, maybe the Bears hire a defensive head coach and they're like, we like Thomas Brown. We want Thomas Brown to be our offensive coordinator. And that's fine with me. But you don't hire this guy as head coach based on, you know, 5 games of an extremely talented roster, finally not being burdened by the dumbest motherfucker alive. You just don't do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like Thomas Brown. It comes across like I hate this guy. I like Thomas Brown.
Yeah, I like him too. It's the skepticism of the history of hiring the interim guy. It's because it's not really a clean evaluation period, even though it feels like it should be.
Yeah.
So I guess to round this out, to end it, Travis, the Matt Eberflus era is in the books. Can we? I never thought I'd say this, but he's the worst, right? The worst we've had in our lifetimes, right?
Yeah, Kyle, I've been saying for weeks, the defining moment of the Eberflus era is going to be Tyree Stevenson looking at the crowd as that Hail Mary is going out. And somehow it's not going to be.
It's not.
He one-upped that shit. He got worse than a player celebrating and shit-talking an away team as the game was being lost behind him. Yeah, there's just no fucking competition, which is crazy because Mark Trestman was a coach for this team, and he is one of the worst coaches in NFL history. John Fox did a horrible job.
Dave Wanstead was. Team. I know you.
Dave Wanstead.
You weren't quite tuned in during the Wanstead era, but I hated
pretty bad.
Dave, I hated Dave Wanstead so much that when he started appearing on Chicago media in the last couple of years as like a Bears elder statesman, I was like, what the fuck? This would be like bringing on Hermann Göring or something in the 50s or 60s, because it's like, well, I mean, you know, for commentary on politics, because it's like, well, I mean, that's been a long time ago. He's still obviously, he's a guy with a lot of experience in this area. Like, no, why are we asking Dave Wanstead what the Bears head coach?
It was always just like, look at that mustache. Yeah, he's got a big old mustache.
I don't need to know what Dave Wanstead would have done in this situation. I watched Dave Wanstead do it, and it was fucking terrible.
Yeah, it pretty much
sucked.
But
I've lived through Wanstead. I've lived through Trestman. I've lived through Fox and Geron.
I mean, this, you know what this does?
This motherfucker, because
it makes Matt Nagy look so good. Matt Nagy is better than all those guys.
Matt Nagy would have this team in the playoffs, and I don't even think that highly of him.
Yeah.
This specific roster with this quarterback, Matt Nagy would have him in the playoffs.
Matt Nagy is going to come out here and be like, if I had that motherfucker at quarterback, I'd have been your coach for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening?
Yeah, it's just crazy to be here. And I think what drives it home is that Eberflus, you know, okay, Dick Geron was not a very good head coach. But at the same time, what head coach was going to make the playoffs with Jim Miller and Chris Chandler and Kate Down? You know, John Fox was terrible, but like he started Matt Barkley for half of a season, for God's sake. Like,
we know John Fox has been a good coach over his career. So,
and Mark Trestman, you know, for all that Mark Trestman was bad in year two, he was good on offense in year one, and nobody could do anything with a defense that was giving up 30 points a game. Matt Eberflus, he had a better roster than any of those guys ever had to deal with this year. And he single-handedly almost proved that he was the reason that they were failing. It's incredible. That cements him. If we added head coaches to the bracket the next time we did it, there's a good chance he'd win the whole damn thing.
Yeah. So this is, I just looked it up if you wondered what that typing was. Matt Eberflus, second ring of hell for being a squanderer. Just to be clear, according to Dante's Inferno, that's like the wooded area. He's being torn limb from limb by hounds while running naked through the woods. That's Matt Eberflus. That's what he's going to be doing.
All right, we're ending right there. I don't want to try to top any of that. Let's the second circle of hell. Squanderers beware.
That's right. Welcome to the second circle of hell, you son of a bitch. You know what I said when we hired Maddie?
That better be the episode title. Oh my
God. You know what I said, Kyle? I said Maddie Eberflus is going to be he's going to suck. He's going to be bad, right? And what I was really focusing on was that, like, even as a defensive coordinator, his defenses had never been great. But what I said was, he's going to be so bland. He's going to be here for such a short period of time that we're going to forget he ever happened, right? It's going to be this transitionary period. We'll be like, what was that guy's name? And I was so fucking wrong because he ended up being so awful.
Yeah, I thought worst case we were just getting like another John Fox or another Dick Geron even. But he was just so much worse.
That's right. All right. Well, have fun in the second circle of hell, being torn limb from limb by woods. You're running naked through those woods, Eberflus, and you ain't never getting another head coaching job.
The squanderers. All right. What a hell of a place to end. I love that. All right. See you next week, folks. Maybe. Maybe. There's probably stuff to talk about Thomas Brown's first game as a head coach.
Hell yeah. We'll break down a Bears victory over the 49ers. I'm not going to say I'll shit a turkey if that doesn't happen, guys. All right. One is enough.
Yeah, well, we wouldn't believe you if you said you were, you coward.
I don't. Got to go find like a Cornish hen.
That's not a turkey. That's specifically not a turkey. What circle of hell is there for people like you trying to finagle their way out of an oath, Travis? What's the oath breakers?
Dante's Inferno. Well, we know what that one is. That's not where I belong. Finaglers. Finaglers.
Is finagling a sin?
Nope, it's not in there.
Just on its surface.
I am going scot-free, baby. All right, I am not in hell at all. I'm outside. I'm looking at the sign, maybe. Trying to finagle my way out of it.
All right. See you next week, folks. Way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.